the tabletop. Take away
game mechanics on display.
Three designers share the stage.
Pick a genre and we'll play
the tabletop. Take away.
Welcome back to the Tabletop Takeaway. I'm Trevor Muller-Hagel.
I'm Ananda Gunaratna.
And I'm Charlie McCarron.
And today is our wrap-up episode of Gateway Games. We covered Ticket to Ride, Azul, and Small World, all of which play extremely differently, but all are kind of unified in the fact that they're very approachable games.
Yeah.
So let's just kick it off with a discussion. What do you think makes a fun, engaging gateway game?
That's the... however much money it is, question, isn't it? It's probably not $1 million, but maybe.
That's the $100,000 question.
Yeah, I mean, being able to identify what's going to be a gateway game, I think, is quite valuable. If you're in the business of publishing games, as Charlie can attest to, I'm sure.
Yes, I think I mentioned in an episode that my boss is often saying, we just need to find the next Ticket to Ride in Azul, and then we'll be set. Somewhat jokingly, because you know it's hard to replicate the success of those games.
Right. But
yeah, I think as we talked about, it's kind of like also hitting at the right time makes it a gateway game. So like, you know, maybe some games just happen to be there, like Catan. Which, you know, has some, it's very much approachable, but it does have some quirky rules that's like, I don't know if that would necessarily be considered the most approachable game, but just because everyone had it, it was, became a gateway game too.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
And I guess there's a little bit of a distinction between a gateway game and an evergreen game, right?
Sure.
Or is there?
There is a distinction, I would say.
Yeah, there's even like a term we use at Asmodee, evergreens and pillar games, which are even more of like, this is going to support an entire studio forever.
Right.
Evergreens is like, well, we're going to keep making print runs of it.
Mm-hmm.
So, and then there's like another category of games that's like, did one print run? And then after that, it didn't have enough life to keep doing print runs, which is honestly most games that get published.
95%.
Would that be more like a perennial game? Or
sure. Yeah.
I don't know. Is that little, what perennial means?
A little flower
keep
that
planting
was beautiful
it.
And then it had its day.
It bloomed for like 3 days and called it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So we have already talked, you know, obviously having simple mechanics is important for a gateway game, but I mean, it can't just be that, right?
No, because, you know, there's a lot of very simple games out there. And, you know, part of with being a gateway game is being able to access your audience. And if you can't access your audience, then you can't get enough notoriety for people to really approach your game in larger volumes.
Yeah.
Because I think gateway also does kind of have an evergreen tinge to it, right? Like, it's something that's approachable, enjoyable. It's
timeless.
Timeless, yeah.
Yeah. One thing that we talked about a little bit previously, I think, that is important is if the idea is the game is going to be introducing people to an entire genre of games, then it wants to maybe be the simplest reflection of that genre. So I think one important thing is identifying the mechanics that define the genre and then boiling them down to the basics. So like Small World, which we covered as one of our games, you know, it takes the idea of combat and it really, really simplifies it down. The idea is still you're taking over territories, but doing so is very easy. You don't have to like roll a bunch of dice or play a bunch of cards. It's just, okay, you need to have enough troops, and then defense is also quite simple. Just how many troops are you leaving there, and that's going to make things more expensive for the next player.
Well, and right. Yeah, to call back to our Minis War Game series we just did, I didn't really even think of Small World as a Minis War Game, but it kind of is because the core of that genre also is deciding what your army is going to be. And that's what Small World does very quickly, because it's like, oh, these this particular power and race combined also tells you how many units you get. So it's already, it's like built in simple, I guess, unit costs for setting up.
Yeah. Yeah. I really, not to go back to Small World really quick, but I really did like that smash up concept, especially when it's not smash up that you choose. Cause like in the game smash up, I think you have agency over what your two decks are that you combine. But having it be where it's pre-combined and then you choose which combination you like the most, I think that's a really neat and elegant system. And I like, yeah. Okay. I'll stop going off on the game we just talked about.
Yeah. I mean, I can see examples of in the other games we played too. Like Azul boils down tile placement, specifically the dynamic of capturing points from previously placed tiles is represented very simply in Azul, because it's just, okay, for every joined or every contiguous tile in the row where you place it, you get a point. For every contiguous tile in the column, you get a point. It's just the very basic idea that, okay, I can get points from previous tiles that have been placed with my new tiles, which is, I think, one of the core features of the tile placement genre in general, but it's just in the simplest form in Azul.
Yeah. Ticket to Ride with route building, you know.
Yeah.
It's great because it's just, you know, so straightforward. Not a lot of math, numbers, currency, nothing like that, you know. Just the core of the route building. And then you find out, like, what you enjoy about that. And then you find other games in that genre. So I think there is a lot of wisdom in that gateway games aren't just gateways into the hobby, but gateways into a specific game style. And I think if you can focus on that and this new kind of world of looking for gateway games, that'll be more successful than just trying to like make, I'm going to make a really easy game that people will like. It's like, well, what people? There's a lot of people out there. Some people even consider Wingspan to be a gateway game, which I don't know if I fully agree with that, because it has a bit more complexity than a lot of other games out there with the comboing and scoring. But
then, again, you do have the there's that historical element to it as well, right? Mm-hmm. Like Monopoly could probably be considered a gateway game, even though for almost entirely historical reasons,
right?
Yeah. Thinking about what makes a good gateway game is, I was just thinking about this in terms of Small World and Ticket to Ride in Azul to some extent, but like the feeling of exploration that you get from these games, like, ooh, I want to see what happens if I pursue this strategy. And I think that's a good thing to have in a game. This feeling like, ooh, there's more here to explore, because the other thing that makes them work well is you want to replay them again right away. So right.
Yes.
Right. What did I do wrong? What can I do to improve?
That's a good point.
Seeing a clear path.
Yeah, yeah. Replayability is very important. And, you know, some people might think, well, isn't replayability important in any game? I mean, not necessarily. I think,
you know, honestly, and anymore, it's harder to find games with, like, if you have a ton of replayability, is that actually worth it now? Because a lot of people don't even play their games four times.
Right. Yes.
And so, like, it's a changing market out there.
Yeah.
It's hard to... And that might be also what's hard to find a new gateway game, too.
Well, I think with gateway games, one of the reasons maybe why replayability is important is because you are going to be playing it repeatedly, because you're using it to get people into playing games with you, right? You're going to be playing it a lot with new players. So it needs to be fun for both the new players who you're trying to draw into the hobby, but also fun for the
ambassador.
Yeah, the ambassador who has to play it again and again and again.
Right.
Yeah.
So and have these different variations. Like Small World is great with that, right? So yeah. Like Ticket to Ride, I would get pretty burned out if I kept playing that every week. I don't know if I could play Ticket to Ride every week.
Yeah.
But it still has enough going on to where, especially if you play with different people and they have different ways of playing it, then that could actually make it a bit more fun too.
Yeah. I mean, in my opinion, Carcassonne is maybe the best gateway game that I have seen.
Which we didn't cover because we've already covered it.
Yes. Yeah, we covered it for Tile Placement way back when. But Carcassonne is incredible. Like, it just, it never gets old for me. And it's got tons of expansions. But even the base game is a ton of fun. There's just so much variation just because, you know, the map, you're building the map and it's going to come out different each time.
Yeah. So infinite possibilities, basically.
Yeah. It always feels different. It doesn't feel like, you know, like sometimes there are some games where having a variable map doesn't feel like it impacts that much. Like in right. Catan, you know, the map changes each game, but, and it does matter, but it doesn't feel like the game is different, really.
Right. You're just hoping that your numbers are rolled so you can get your resources and build the thing.
Yeah.
Yeah. Although, a little counterpoint to that, I played a lot of Catan, and I think for someone who's new to the game genre, it does feel quite different every time you play Catan. And I think one of the tricks that's really used well in Catan and Ticket to Ride and Small World is that you have a setup choice at the beginning that really impacts what you're doing for a lot of the game. Catan, it's like, ooh, I get to place my places down. Did that work out? Well, let's see. And then you get to the satisfaction, like we were talking about in Magical Athlete, that entirely is like seeing what's going to happen. Ticket to Ride, you're picking your routes, which is quite important for the rest of the game. In Small World, you're picking your power and race. That matters a ton how you play out the game. So I think that's a good trick, is like give players some meaningful choice in how they're going to play out that round right away.
Yeah. Well,
and not just meaningful, but also kind of sticky too, aren't they? Because sticky in the sense that it is irreversible.
Right.
Like, in Catan, once a building's down, it's down for good. Wherever you start, that's going to determine where you get to go, right? Likewise, in Ticket to Ride, you're putting things on the board permanently. Small World, things are moving about, but the race that you choose is fixed, and it is quite costly to take a new one. And I mean that might be an important part of it, like. But because when you have this is starting to feel like a takeaway. When you have when you have choices that are very permanent for that game, that are very impactful and that you can't just easily change around, then you really have to explore the impact of those choices for that game, right? You can't go out and try lots of different things. You sort of have to follow the course that's been set by what you've already chosen. And I guess why that might be good for a gateway game is, first of all, it makes things pretty simple for you, right? It narrows the decision space because you can't easily pivot to a different strategy. You kind of have to keep going down the path that you've started going down. And it also encourages replaying the game, because if you want to explore a different strategy, you have to start over and start from a different point because the choices are so sticky. And I guess one thing that this reminds me a little bit of is in Tech Trees. I remember I played Slipways a while ago, and one of the things that really struck me about that game, compared to Civilization, and Slipways is a game that I feel is in the same space as Civilization, but does it way, way better. In some ways, you're building like a space empire. You're colonizing different planets. You're researching technologies. You're establishing trade routes, very much like Civilization, but in space. And also, there's no war or conflict. But the really cool thing about the tech tree is that when you unlock a technology and advance to the next tier, your scientists get bored of the previous tier. So like you can't go back and research the other technologies from the tier that you left.
Oh, funny.
Which means if you want to experiment with those technologies, you have to play again, right? And if you compare this to Civilization, where, you know, you can always just research the
get everything.
You can just get everything, and the old techs are cheap compared to the new ones. So why not just, you know, fill out the tech tree? Having sticky decisions that limit you from other choices you could have made really is quite effective in getting you to replay a game. So it makes me think of that. So sorry, that's I guess a bit of a rambly way to say that. I think my takeaway is that sticky, irreversible choices that block other strategies are very helpful for making a gateway game, because they help narrow your strategy and keep you focused on it, and they also encourage you to replay to try other strategies.
And then you want to find other people to replay with, thus introducing them to the game, helping it grow a little bit more.
Yeah, and and having like fixed buildings like in Catan or Ticket to Ride, where you put things down on the board and they never move around or come off, I think that helps a lot.
Yeah.
Yeah, and what you said there, Trevor, too, is important of like the game's got to be easy enough to teach to new groups, or it's not going to grow and actually be a gateway for people.
They almost have to be excited about playing within like 5 to 10 minutes of starting the game. Once they understand the basic core concept, they start seeing what they can do, and then they can get excited about it like right off the bat, because then you know that they'll be in it, and then they'll get through it. It's like, oh, I want to experience that again and try like a different thing, and then it kind of generates that excitement over again. Yeah. It's not easy to design gateway games that are fun and engaging.
Yeah. This is a fun conversation because thanks to whoever suggested this. I think this was a listener suggestion.
Yeah, it was. It's in Discord.
Nice. Yeah, and at first it's like, well, that's such a broad topic. But we haven't gotten to discuss like wide varieties of genres and figure out like what makes them good. And this feels like more a discussion about what makes a good game, because Gateway is like successful game.
Successful, easy to learn, approachable.
Yeah. Though, I mean, like, yeah, there's definitely a difference. There can be super heavy games that are really good.
Oh, yeah.
So it just depends on what your goal is as a designer.
Yeah.
Yeah. Do I have a takeaway from this conversation, but
I know.
What are some other great gateway games you guys know about?
Well, I was thinking about
that we've covered or that we haven't covered.
Either one.
Well, Splendor to me is one.
Splendor.
Which that one
for engine building.
You can listen to our episode on that, but
Dominion.
Yeah.
For deck building.
Yep.
I was just thinking
a different group of cards.
Yeah. I was just thinking, is there two player games that are gateway games too? Because when we were starting to talk about like, you know, gateway games spread by lots of people playing them. And I think that's an inherent hurdle that two player games have. Talking to Ben at Floodgate one time, he's like, yeah, it's hard. It's just, by logic, harder to get two-player games to spread because there's less people at the table. You probably are playing with a partner, and so you're not going to buy another copy. You have to rely on word of mouth, like, yeah, this was really good. Yeah.
I mean, what about chess, Charlie?
Oh.
Yeah.
Is that a gateway game?
I guess.
I would say Magic the Gathering is.
Oh.
Yeah.
It's gotten a lot of people into the board game hobby as well.
Oh, yeah.
And board game designers.
Yeah, the amount of games Magic has influenced and that are in existence even because someone loved playing Magic and they realized, like, oh, this is fun. I want to make my own game.
Yep.
Yeah.
A Cosmic Encounter, maybe?
Oh, yeah.
I remember I played...
I could see it.
Cosmic Encounter when I was a kid.
I played a Marvel Legendary not long after my first Dominion play. I don't know if I'd consider Legendary necessarily a gateway game, but it still holds, you know, it's a deck builder with similar ideas to it.
Pandemic probably would be a gateway game for cooperative games. It was, all of these games are kind of there because they're the first. So
there's that too.
Maybe that's another thing to think about.
Just design something brand new.
That's the historical aspect to it, right?
Yeah.
Right.
Of course, well, I guess the thing about being the first is then, you know, what... Like, if gateway games take the core of a genre and boil it down to the simplest form, but if you're the first game in the genre, then it hasn't really been defined yet, right?
Right.
So how do you... Right. Well, I guess some games like Dominion, it is naturally the simplest form because, you know, then everybody else just tries to take Dominion built and make it more complicated. So that's kind of, you know, you have that accidentally. But...
I think my takeaway I'll make is Ananda's definition that we were also talking more off the podcast about, but the idea that you are boiling down a genre into a cool, like simple to learn, clear game. And when I say Pandemic is the first, it's not really the first co-op game, but I don't know what game it came from, maybe, but there were cooperative, like, Dungeons & Dragons types games, but, you know, like, it was kind of taking the ideas of cooperating, but, like, very simple map type movement around, take care of some cubes and trade cards, and, yeah. So, that was enlightening to think about, like, okay, it doesn't have to do something brand new. It just has to, like, figure out what's an aspect of gaming that could be more easily condensed for someone starting out.
Absolutely, yeah. I think for my takeaway to kind of build a little bit on that is having the game be very approachable. And approachable spans across a lot of different elements to a game. So table presence, having it be interesting looking, but not super busy. So that, you know, if you have a lot of tokens, chips, dice, you know, meeples, that suddenly feels like a lot of information that you have to learn. So even if it's a simple game, it's not actually approachable because someone will look at it and like, I'm not going to play that. They'll look at it once and like walk away. If the rule book is 35 pages long, nope, that's too long. I want like 2-4 pages at most, and half of that should be like credits thanking playtesters. Like, yeah.
Well, and what you're talking about with approachability and table presence, I think one important thing also is understanding the theme from the table presentation is important.
Yeah.
I mean, one of the things that I like most about Catan is that, you know, looking at it on the table, you understand what's going on, right? It looks like an island. It looks very natural. You can see the buildings and the roads. You can tell what's going on the board. Similarly, Ticket to Ride, you know, you can sort of understand, okay, here's some rails. We've got trains going between them. So it's, you know, some games are a bit more... abstract, but not by very much. I guess even Azul is quite abstract, but it's also it's about making mosaics, so it's probably clear enough, and the tiles certainly look very nice. And I guess this is in contrast to, like, you know, heavy Euro games where the board is much more abstracted and just have a bunch of worker spaces on it.
You have a rondel in the corner with worker spaces and a spinner wheel. Like, what's going on?
Like, you want something that's both aesthetic and functional.
Right.
Just thinking on that note, I'd say Viticulture is a good gateway game for worker placement.
Oh, sure.
Simply because it is like you're placing literal people out to do tasks around the farm and or the vineyard. And it's very one-to-one feeling of like, oh, I place a worker here, it's going to plant some something or whatever. And
grapes.
Yeah.
I don't know how the game works.
Yeah. I think you can get away with a lot of unique actions if they're natural feeling. So like a little game I'm coming to Kickstarter soon. It probably is when you listen to this episode, but Ringyo is one that I have coming out with Paverson Games, and it's about Japanese forestry back in a long time ago, Edo period. And there's tons of actions in that game, but they're all kind of natural because, you know, you place a worker and you cut a tree, you're physically like doing that thing. And it's my heaviest game, but I think it works okay because most of the things feel like you're naturally doing them, I guess.
It actually feels like the action you're doing instead of just some abstract, do this thing, gain 2 money. Okay, great. Mm-hmm. Got it. Yeah, you actually go through the action of what, you know, these samurai foresters are doing.
Simulation.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Simulation.
Yeah.
Well, this was a good episode. Anything else on gateway games? Or
I will say there's a new type of gateway game that's come out in the past decade, I'll say, which is kids games based off of their adult counterparts. So getting kids to start playing games when they are between the ages of 3 and 5 is a new gateway where you just start them young, you know? Then they're never actually not gamers.
Yeah. That is probably the best definition of a gateway game, honestly.
Right? Yep. That's all I got.
I think that's good. Maybe the listeners can chew on that idea.
There you go.
What game would you make approachable for kids?
Like a junior version.
Junior version.
Right.
And then pitch it to that company.
My first Ringyo.
My Little Twilight Imperium.
Yes.
Perfect.
Cool. All right. Well, till next time.
Hey, thanks for listening to The Tabletop Takeaway. This podcast is made possible by listeners like you. So please tell your friends and visit our website at thetabletoptakeaway.com, where you can suggest games and mechanics for us to cover next on the show.